Hello, welcome to Film Interrupted. My name's Jack.
My name's Martin.
My name's Nick.
This week we'll be discussing Alex Cox's 1984 punk nonsense classic Repo Man, my first viewing. I thought I'd seen it before, but clearly I had not. I would have remembered way more than I thought I remembered. But yeah, I we'll come into that later. You guys been watching anything else?
Let's see, I watched The Wild One, Brando.
Where did that come up?
Just by browsing about on the TV and thinking, oh, that's an iconic film that I've never ever seen. And it was just accessible, it was nice and short. It's so tame.
Yeah.
It starts out as like, here's a shocking tale that actually happened in America and must never be allowed to happen again. You know, that kind of like faux, you know, newsreel documentary sort of, you know, intro you get. This actually occurred. And I mean, the gang at one point, they're on pogo sticks. You know, I mean, it's like, how much can you terrorize a town on a pogo stick?
So they're like, they're bikers though, yeah?
Yeah. They don't. It doesn't commit to saying that they're like a Mad Max, like, you know, roaming pack of bikers constantly on the go. And they are kind of weekend bikers, and they go and disturb like an official, like, you know, motorcycle race, and they end up like stealing a trophy for second place and stuff like that. And they go off to this other wee town and they just drive about. And it's a testament to Marlon Brando that he doesn't look utterly ridiculous doing all the things he's doing and saying the things he's saying. But yeah, I mean, short of the kind of the quip of what are you rebelling against, what have you got, outside of that, it's just, it's so flat, it's really, really unmemorable. It doesn't look unappealing, but it's just, it's astonishing how far things have changed to think that any of the behaviour in here would be a deep concern to like the moral majority in a nation. They're just like, it's just so sweet.
Yeah, it's quite funny because I've never seen the film, but all I've seen of the film are like scenes of, or maybe just one scene of Brando issuing a threat or something like that, but I've never seen any action that follows from it, any drama or anything like that.
Yeah,
it just doesn't exist or it isn't worth
as far as action goes in it. He has a bit of a kind of scuffly fist fight with Lee Marvin, who is like the leader of a kind of scruffy hipster pirate fur trapper looking kind of biker gang.
Right.
There seems to be a more interesting film that could have been made about them than the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. They're just kind of like traditional, you know, guys who, you know, have leather jackets and do what Marlon Brando says, and then occasionally, you know, drive around a lady and, you know, threaten her with, we'll drive around you some more, you know. But yeah, it's not one I'd wholeheartedly recommend. It's a kind of curiosity piece.
I remember seeing it and thinking Lee Marvin was like way more of an exuberant performance than Brando. But Brando just does, you know, that way he just didn't even try half the time, but he was still good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He just had that innate charisma. It was just too easy for him almost. So I remember seeing it, just the exact same thing as you. This is an iconic film. I probably should see it. And I don't remember much of it at all, apart from that fist fight with Marvin and just how cool Brando looked. I think it was more like a style piece than anything else.
Mm-hmm. No, very much so. I mean, as far as an actual plot, they go to a place and the people there are a bit annoyed that they're there. Beyond that, not much else happens. There's some accusations. A guy gets put in jail for a bit. There's some miscommunications and so on. But it's really, really just, you know, oh boy, didn't we have a crazy weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if ever was on my list, it's now currently moving, you know, down and down and down and down.
No, it's one to not, you know, get up to switch over when you're like lying in bed, deathly ill, and it's on TCM. But beyond that, I wouldn't suggest going out your time to out your way to watch it.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I've actually not really been going out my way to watch much of anything. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with like I told you a few episodes ago that I got a PlayStation, not the new PlayStation, PlayStation 3. So I've been like just playing that whenever I get a spare minute. So I've finished the two Batman games that I've got, and I'm working through Tomb Raider. And I won. Did you ever play? I think you'd like Red Dead Redemption. Did you ever play that one, Martin?
I've not. I think that's Jack that you're thinking of.
Yeah, well, the most distracting game I've ever played in my life. You run out in this mission, you're determined to do this thing, you're going to the other side of the map, and then a squirrel passes you, and you run off and chase it to try and skin it, and then you pick a flower, and then you meet someone who's like your horse, and you steal it from you, like, you dick! And then you get arrested because you try and steal someone else's horse, and then, you know, it's the most distracting game, but so much fun. Yeah, super enjoyed it.
I like it a lot. I think of all the games I've played, that's probably the most, like, is it right to say artistically stimulating? Because it's
So it's beautiful.
Well, on that note, I watched the remake of RoboCop.
Fantastic.
And was it as shite as you hoped it would be?
In some ways, yes, but I found myself actually feeling oddly favourable towards it.
I agree.
It's kind of like it's a poorly made movie with some really interesting ideas, which it's hard to understand myself why I didn't hate it really, but because I mean it loses its way towards the end. All its action sequences are completely unmemorable and are really flat. There's never any real sense of dramatic tension, but just the notions it brings up, like it starts out with like American peacekeeping forces, but they're basically, you know, droids. It's taking the American drones being used in wars in the Middle East and moving that a step on when it's, you know, it's basically robotic soldiers that have, you know, so humans in charge, but they go, they neutralize threats, they're in touch with the population. And it was a really like engaging idea that level of human removement from war is so tangibly close in a kind of sci-fi environment. And I thought that was quite cool. None of the acting performances were very interesting whatsoever, but I felt drawn in by the notions of, you know, how they were constructing and the politics behind building a, you know, a partially humanized machine so that it could appeal to American voters. I think the Samuel L. Jackson stuff, that was probably the only thing I'd give a pass as to actually like being a good acting performance. He does a really good shtick as a like right-wing fear-mongering, hate-mongering TV presenter who's obviously in the pocket of OCP and, you know, various other interests. But yeah, despite rarely thinking that what the film was doing was really good, I kind of admired that they tried to fit so many like kind of challenging concepts about human life and the responsibility we're willing to give to robots and drones. So yeah, it was a bad film that I was interested in.
I would completely agree. Like, I'm far enough removed from it that I can't remember any specifics about why I liked it, but I remember thinking favourably of it, and I remember thinking a lot of the ideas were good, a lot of the things that it tackles were interesting, and generally I was just invested in the character and the story, you know. It was, for as long as it was on, I was, you know, interested in seeing it through, which is not something I can say, as I just described, you know, it's not something I can say about a lot of films.
I mean, from my point of view, I think because it's a remake that did throw out a lot of the ideas and the content of the original and didn't just try to do a complete retread, that for me generates quite a bit of, you know, the positive feeling for it, that it was a genuine attempt to reimagine this scenario and update it, rather than just to reproduce "I'd buy that for a dollar" and, you know, and so on, all the kind of catchphrases. It doesn't have the kind of schlocky, like, gore of the Verhoeven original. It doesn't have the humour of the original. I'm a huge fan of the original RoboCop. I think it's a tremendous film, and they made the right call in not trying to just, you know, redo that. But yeah, without ever attaining great heights of, like, you know, tension or insight or that kind of thing, I was pretty much enjoying it whilst not thinking it was very good.
It sounds like, I mean, they're really, the director went into it, he's a Brazilian director. I don't know much he's made. He made the Elite Squad movies, and those are two really strong, you know, police movies. You know, the police department in Brazil is, like, just rife with good storytelling.
They're busy, yeah.
Yeah. And moved into this, and I know that he said it was immediately the most frustrating thing he's ever made in his life, that I think there was a lot of interference from Hollywood. And the things that I read about it compared this with David Fincher trying to work on Alien 3 and just how much he was fighting for every single thing that he thought should be in the film, should, you know, was in the script, should be featured, should not be toned back, should not be dumbed down. So I don't want to say it was the studio's fault, because I don't know for sure, but it sounds like it was one of those films where the director was fighting for a vision that he couldn't quite execute.
Yeah, I mean, that broadly chimes in with, I think, how a lot of people felt about it. You get, from what I read, there was people who just straight out hated it, and there was people that just felt it was, there's like, there's a good movie trying to get out, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've seen a lot more recent stuff than I have. I watched one movie, the, oh my God, this is me embarrassing myself with my memory again. Very famous film reviewer recently passed.
Oh, I actually know what film you saw. You saw Life Itself by, I don't know who the filmmaker was, but it's about Roger Ebert.
Thank you. I was really embarrassed. I couldn't remember his name. Yeah, Roger Ebert. And honestly, it was a very lukewarm documentary. I think it tried to cover too much. I think it was, I mean, the time it started filming, Roger Ebert just died like 5 weeks into it and the preparation for it. So the focus of the documentary changed from his past life to, you know, what was going to be the end of his life. And all that was really palpable and, like, just tragic. And did you ever see what happened to him towards the end of his life? Either of you?
What? Yeah, I know he lost, like, you know, a part of his, like, you know, his facial structure. I believe his jaw was mostly gone.
His jaw was completely gone. And, I mean, you want to empathise with the guy, but every time he was on screen, it was, honestly, it was one of the most horrific deformities I've ever seen. It's essentially your entire jawbone, you know, your tongue, your palate is completely out, but your face is still there, and it's hanging from your cheekbones. And underneath that, if you look through your mouth, which is gaping open because there's no muscle structure, is a bandage covering your mouth and your airways. So you're looking through someone's mouth, seeing bandages in their mouth hanging over, and what looks like a really, you know, gay, happy, wide expression, and he's crying, and it's one of the most terrifying things. And, you know, you probably have this too, each of these couples, we kind of turn to each other with, like, if it comes to that, fucking shoot me. I do not want to live if that happens to me at that point in my life. And you see him, things like he's getting his he's getting fed, so they're shoving, like, pipes into his throat, you know, and you can see the pipe through his mouth as he tuck it into his bandages and stuff, and it's, oh my God, that poor man. So as much as you talk about his past life and things like that, you just keep coming back, this is someone dying and his family, and it tries to give it that kind of weight, and that, you know, he did have a really loving family he was with, and it's talking about Pulitzer Prizes and his relationship with Siskel, and the Siskel and Ebert go on the movies, and it just all felt so shallow. Even just talking about films and his love of films, it's like this man's dying, and it was very strange. It didn't sit with me tonally, but you know, I really liked Roger Ebert's writing style, but how do you present someone who's a really good film reviewer on a documentary and talk about their style? So it didn't even try and do that, you know, and I don't blame it. It's just an uncomfortable movie. I don't really understand the praise it got. I feel it's just people feeling it was worthy and giving it a lot of the praise it got. It was very, very heartbreaking and very sorrowful to see, but not evenly paced. It just didn't make a lot of sense to me as something I'd ever want to rewatch. And, you know, I think that's as true of documentaries as true of fiction, and that you would get as much out of that the second time round. And I can't ever see myself willfully watching this. Did you guys watch anything else, or should we move on to our main subject?
Which I think only a couple of episodes of the last season of Boardwalk Empire, which treading through it out of duty, and like I've put in the time on the other ones that I might as well see it through. But it's coming to a slow and very dissipated, disappointing end. Maybe the next ones will pick things up, but it was like the first three seasons were incrementally improved and really strong. And then the fourth season, they sent so many characters off on their separate ways, it completely lost its narrative impetus. And the fifth season now is just a kind of hasty roundup where they're throwing in, you know, new characters left, right and centre, and killing off people that need to be killed off to tie up X storyline and that storyline. So it's not been especially enjoyable. I mean, I think there was, out of the basically 2 hours of watching, there was one moment that I really enjoyed. The rest were were rather, well, a bit, it's just all a bit unnecessary stuff. I don't really want to go in the fifth season back to like childhood formative years of a main character. It's not something I'm too interested in. Spent a lot of time in like Nucky's childhood. It's not its strongest point, but as I say, there's still, you know, some more to go. It might improve, but yeah, I just feel it was a show that kind of lost its way.
Yeah, I dropped out after the first season and a half, maybe.
I think it got to its strongest point end of the third season, when they really did believably bring about, you know, a real sense of conflict, and there was just immense tension in it. Because I really wasn't sure how it was going to play out, despite it being a historical thing where you kind of know, well, he can't die yet, and he can't die yet. But after that sort of high point, it really, really went down, because it just, it kept too many characters that they could have killed off. It progressed storylines and that were meandering. The main characters didn't really do much of note, apart from one of them died, you know. It was just all a bit, it was all a bit sad, because I was a huge fan of it for those, like, you know, first 3 years of it, and then they had a kind of ropey season, and it seems that they just got told to wrap things up a bit hastily. So I don't know what can be redeemed from it, but yeah, it was,
it's a shame to hear.
Not the most heartwarming tale.
I mean, did you both watch Breaking Bad? Are you both up to date on Breaking Bad?
I finished it.
You finished it?
I'm like halfway in it. I watched a couple of seasons and really enjoyed them, and then started having babies and stuff, and, you know, things got in the way. So I'll go back and finish it, and I have high hopes for it. But
yeah, I mean, well, I won't say too much about it then. We are maybe about halfway through, or maybe slightly more than halfway through season 5. I think there's 6 seasons all in. And it's, I don't think I was quite prepared for how slow the show is. Like, see, when you go in, I mean, it's just, it's a cultural phenomenon. Now, we all know that Walter White eventually becomes a monster of some kind. And the process of him going from, you know, respectable, nerdy science teacher to monster is possibly commendably slow so far, but, you know, 5 seasons in, where I suppose only a few months of real of time of show time has passed. You know, as exciting as the show is in moments, the narrative progression doesn't really seem to be a primary concern, and it's something that they're certainly really taking their time with. I even question sometimes exactly what the show is and what the show is doing. There's a main villain at the moment. Again, I won't give away too many details, where you can almost imagine the writers sort of thinking, how did we end up in this place? Like, of all the avenues we could have taken, like, for, you know, places for this character to go, why are we now here? Like, but we are here.
And now we have to story our way out of it and try and get back to something good.
Yeah, it's sort of like that. And there's one episode in particular that I thought might be interesting. Do you remember the episode, is it called Fly, Jack, that was directed by Rian Johnson?
The bottle episode, yeah.
The bottle episode?
Yeah, single location, the bottle.
Yeah. Is that what you call that?
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. But, yeah, so it's a single location and it's a self-contained episode, effectively, that's just all about the characters, where the thrust of it is they're trying to catch a fly that's got into the place that they're cooking the crystal meth. And I think these shows are interesting. I actually think the episode is painful and wasn't one that I particularly enjoyed. I think the worst... It actually put me off returning to the show after I saw it. Rian Johnson, I think, is a really good filmmaker. He's the guy who made Brick and he's doing the new Star Wars film, I think.
Looper,
yeah. So someone with a really good visual sense, which I think is what they wanted for a show that's so, you know... obviously, if it's a bottle, then it's a single location, so they want to get all the, you know, the sort of visual stimulation they can out of it. But the leaps that he takes visually, even though I like them for what they are, feel like they're not in keeping with the tone of the show. And for me, if I'm watching the show, if I'm invested in it, if I've got seasons behind me, the tone of the show is the priority, and actually sustaining, you know, what the show has laid out before, even though what the filmmakers actually bring into the table could be and would be interesting in any other context, means that I'm taken out of it. And that's just maybe like a phenomenon that's particular for television, where I would actually resist more creativity, and because clearly all I'm looking for is what this show would offer anyway. Did you like the show, Jack? The episode, rather?
I liked the episode. I mean, I didn't think it put me off it. I understand what you mean, as it sticks out from the rest of the canon visually and narratively. There is no other bottle episode in that entire series. Most TV shows will do one every season or two for budget constraints. But I think they did a good job of it. I don't know. I liked the way it resolved. I liked what happened in the course of it. It didn't disrupt it for me too much.
Yeah, and I was just thinking there, I actually usually like the episodes that are all set in one location of TV shows. Like, there's a really good episode of Men Behaving Badly called Sofa, I think it's called, where they're all on the sofa for the whole episode. That's genuinely very well written and very clever. I used to have a thing where I would be able to recommend, like, based on, like, any show, like, one episode that would be, like, the perfect introduction to the show. And a lot of them were single location episodes, and now the only one I can remember is that one episode of Men Behaving Badly. But generally I'm a fan of the one location episodes, but this one, I think it just diverts too much from what, you know, the reason that I'm watching the show.
Well, okay, just very broadly on Breaking Bad, one of my reluctances of starting any TV show is that it has so many creative parts over such a long duration that you can't guarantee it will end up well. In fact, I can't think of, aside from Breaking Bad, which sticks the landing, can't think of another TV show that does. I'm being serious. I can't think of a single TV show that ends where it should end, not just where the quality went down and they couldn't make it anymore, or, you know, the station shut it down because there weren't enough viewers. It's the only show that started and ended and had an internal narrative arc. But I was watching that at one point in real time. Martin, you've been recommending it to me for a couple of years and I was holding off like, it's not that it's not a good show. I mean, I'm sure it was like always confident in your recommendation, but it's just, I don't want to start watching a fucking TV show that ends badly or is just cut off halfway through. I've got the same fear with The Walking Dead and the same fear with Game of Thrones. I don't know how where those are going or how long the quality will stay up for. But Breaking Bad sticks the landing and you should see it through.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I will, you know, we will stick it through, but it's just one of those things where, you know, you finish an episode and your first instinct is not to start the next episode, which is certainly interesting when it comes to American television, where, you know, the binge watch is something that is so, you know, such a thing now.
I used to... That's not my thing about it at all. It's immediately to watch it. It's, oh my God. It's, I went through a phase where I was very, very good at self-control for television. It's like, I'm going to download this and wait for 3 weeks until I've got 3 hours worth and then watch it all at once. Because I needed it to consume it like that. And I used to do that with that kind of like patience and self-control. But come the fifth season, I just couldn't do it in case some asshole ruined it for me at a water cooler conversation. So I watched it episode by episode as it came out. But yeah, it's Breaking Bad's an awesome show. I'm really glad it exists. And it kind of set a standard for me from what I expect from TV from now on. And I keep track of what TV shows I might eventually want to watch one day if they end. And what I'll hopefully be assured is, you know, as strong an ending as that. But yeah, I just avoid most TV shows. I mean, my wife was watching Homeland, and she said that she just stopped watching after season two because they'd written themselves into a corner, and she attempted into season three and said it was terrible. And she just ruined, you know, she ruined so many hours of viewing for yourself. And that's just the danger you've got with TV. It's like you put 2 years into something and then you just go and ruin it. You know what I mean? It's just the danger. So
it's a high risk life.
Well, I know, but I'm being whiny, but you get what I mean. All right, let's talk about Repo Man. Martin, this was your recommendation. Why don't you take it off?
I wanted to talk about this so that I wouldn't have to watch any more animation. That was the primary impetus behind me choosing this.
To be honest, mate, it is the closest thing to an animation that has ever been committed to film. Like,
that was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, this is as episodic as Over the Garden Wall.
Yeah, the thought did occur to me while I was viewing that, you know, it wasn't as far removed as some of the stuff you'd recommended. That, but yeah, it's a film that always stuck out as an oddity in my mind.
So you had seen it, yeah?
Yeah, there's not many movies where you really like reminisce about the production design, like decades after seeing it, and talk to other people about the production design. And they're the same, they're just as enthusiastic. And there's such a striking look to this film. It's off-kilter, it's a really beautifully kind of scuzzy depiction of LA in the 80s. I like the way it looks and I like the way it sounds. And I know it's not like a tremendous story, they're not really trying to do that. It's just a loser going on the way. Someone just like brandished like a big lump of dough in my face. That's someone with my wife, by the way.
Okay.
That's solid dough.
What's that gonna be?
It's rye.
That's your lump, rye?
Rye.
Yeah, are we like sailing to America? But yeah, there's a lot of baking activity going on in Lynch household. So, anecdotally, what I'd heard was that the drive behind having such distinct packaging for the items, the, you know, food, the drink, was partly from licensing, that they didn't want to, you know, pay for this and pay for that. But I love how it plays out, because you see like the normal supermarket stuff on the aisle over, and you see normal liquor store stuff on the shelves behind. But the actual characters in the movie, they're just like stuck in this world of completely bland commodities that they can't get out of. And it's just it's an effect that's just, it's stuck with me for as long, I must have seen this film about, 20 years ago. And I've just, if any movie can make me, you know, reminisce fondly about, you know, like pet food, then I think they're doing something right.
Yeah, I mean, the branding thing is very blunt, but it's, I feel like it's almost like a satire of films that satirize, you know, the this sort of thing, where it's so blunt that it's making fun of people who think it's cool to satirize stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's almost got a double layer of remove from the actual thing, and that's what makes it funny. And I think that sort of tone, I mean, I don't know if that is like the hermeneutical key for me to get some pleasure out of the film, which I found difficult to watch. I had seen it before as well, and I couldn't remember anything about it, like, because I remember feeling disappointed after the first time I saw it, and rewatching it, I was like, well, maybe I misunderstood it, maybe I'll get something more out of it this time. But no, I didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed it enough. There's enough to like about it for me to give it a bare pass, but it wasn't something that I think I'll ever revisit again. And it's something that's thought of extremely fondly by a lot of people. A lot of people I respect think very highly of it, and I wouldn't, you know, be as, you know, cold to say that it's just nostalgia, but the appeal of it is somewhat lost on me. Again, maybe the kind of double layer of satire is something that I need to commit to the rest of the film. But I, to be honest, I think I spoke before, like, just when we were talking there about how storytelling's becoming sort of a lost art, and this film, I mean, for even for the decade that it's made, it feels like a series of events that aren't linked or have no interest in being linked by any kind of vision for a story. Like, and that, as I say it, it feels like something that, you know, should be beneath me as a film critic, because
it's wholeheartedly, you know, just going through MacGuffin after MacGuffin.
Right, so we do a kind of bad job as podcasters, telling people what a film's about before we start going into it. But in terms of Repo Man, there's really no point. I mean, Repo Man is it's a mood piece. I mean, it's about some white kid punk suburban asshole who gets accidentally hired by Repo Men and gets caught up in a conspiracy with aliens in a trunk of a car. It's about as solid as it gets, and that's it. And there's nothing else to it that makes a grain of, like, you know, consequential narrative sense, and it doesn't really need it. This is a film, if you're talking about consistency, it is the most consistent mood and humour throughout the entire film. And you're talking about satire and comedy. I heard someone talk about, like, David Zucker film once, was like, you know, if you didn't like that joke, it doesn't matter, because there's two more coming at you right now. And I felt like it's somewhat the same with Repo Man. It wasn't the same tone of humour. It wasn't as broad or as bombastic, but just, like, stupid little detail after stupid little detail or throwaway line that, you know, I'm thinking I've got four or five in my head right now that I had to, like, muffle my mouth and not laugh out too loud because my wife was sleeping beside me when I was trying to watch it before, you know, everyone went to bed at night. And yeah, it's just a really enjoyable film about absolutely nothing, that's just pure mood. It's almost tempting to say that because it's so evasive in what it's trying to do, that it might be this huge satire of American lifestyle, but that's bullshit. It's not about that at all. I think it's just trying to have fun and poke a little bit of fun at people. There's no overarching philosophy to it. There's no overarching narrative to it, but it's very successful in doing that and, you know, just having its own internal logic and being fun, and that's something that you don't see movies doing anymore. You know,
I mean, if I was going to be a completely, like, empty character in a movie who I've got no admiration for, I'd want to be Otto. You know, he's not someone I aspire to be. But if you're going to be an empty nobody, you might as well be there to be in the heart of, like, this, you know, this kind of, like, madcap world where, you know, you're lucky enough to have, you know, some kind of interesting things happen, even though you've got nothing interesting to contribute yourself whatsoever. I mean, he's not properly a punk or anything. He's not really in it. I mean, his friend comes back from prison and, you know, sort of kind of reclaims a girl he's interested in. He gets his job just by happenstance. he leaves just because he's got nothing better to do. He's just an empty character, but I like him.
I don't. and I'm aware that it's, yeah, I mean, a mood piece would probably be the right term for it, and I like things about the mood. Like, I actually did think that the tone would really appeal to me as it began. I don't think it commits enough to its tone for me, like, in terms of, like, you compare it to, like, a trauma film or something like that, where, you know, the tone is pervasive and it escalates constantly, but in a very natural and organic way, to the point where you actually feel like there's a real visionary behind it, even though it's ridiculous. For all you can say about Lloyd Kaufman, he is, you know, a visionary, and I just don't think that Alex Cox is. I think he is incompetent at times when it comes to the storytelling, so much so that, I mean, that we were actually, I was suggesting once that we do an episode about movie pet peeves, and one of my pet peeves is when a filmmaker, I don't trust the filmmaker because I don't think they know what they're doing, and so much of this film takes, there's so many diversions that suddenly become the central focus of the film. Like, there's a sequence where, you know, the punks are going around robbing, and then suddenly there's a hold up where Emilio Estevez and, oh, what's his name?
Harry Dean Stanton.
Harry Dean Stanton, the most famous actor in the world. They're, you know, in a hold up, and suddenly this is the most important thing. This, you know, the lost relationship between these two characters, the punks, who are like the least interesting characters in the world, and Harry Dean Stanton and Emilio Estevez are now caught up in this situation, which has very little to do with the main thrust of the plot, which is the alien thing, presumably. And this whole
presumably
side thing,
yeah,
I think if you're trying to, like, latch on to, you know, a narrative thrust in this film, you're on the wrong track yeah, for it, because it's not there.
But I can see better mood pieces elsewhere. Like, this film, it doesn't have, I mean, I like, you know, the bright, airy, sunny days with the trash-filled rooms and stuff like that, and then the cool nights with the purple skies and stuff. The world of the film I find really appealing, and I think it's a fairly authentic representation of a certain type of mood. But, you know, the guy's not Tarkovsky, you know, the guy's not even Lloyd Kaufman. He's not a tone filmmaker. He's just somebody who had some notions to do some things. And even though I think that maybe undersells the film, because I think it is what it is, and I think people are keen to attribute value to something that just is what it is. But for me, as I'm watching it, my pleasure levels are dipping constantly to the end.
Well, I mean, if it's the wrong tone for you, if it doesn't make you laugh, if you don't enjoy its progress from one step to the next, then that's
yeah,
fair
born
enough.
As fuck, yeah. I would say. The tone didn't do much for me after a little while. Like, I think if you're going to commit to that tone, where it's like a tone of almost silliness or anarchism, I think you need to have a commitment to be constantly escalating and elevating, like a trauma film would. Because with this film, it neither delivers the goods in terms of being completely out there, and it never gives you anything to anchor yourself in terms of the characters. So it just leaves you in a sort of nether zone where you're kind of numb throughout most of the film, or at least I was. I mean, clearly you guys had a different reaction.
Well, I mean, most of the characters are kind of going through most of the emotions that you've described. I mean,
in terms of what?
The vast majority of the people in this film are, like, completely numb and going through the motions. And it's only, like, the jaded cynic or the complete idiot that has any kind of different experience in it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if something doesn't make you laugh, it doesn't make you laugh. And, you know, you can't really change that, you know? I mean, I suffered through Chaplin for you, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would take Repo Man over The Gold Rush. Maybe not over City Lights, but over The Gold Rush. I just really enjoyed all the characters. I mean, you said it was a cartoon. It was cartoonish. I liked the fact the police officer was just a total dick who was making complete nonsense stories. I was in two world wars. I was a prison guard. And it's just, it's, I felt like they were ad-libbing on set. And if they weren't ad-libbing, then I almost got admiration for Cox as a scriptwriter, that he had, he could dream up such nonsense that would say so good, such good dialogue. I really enjoyed...
I just feel like I can see better versions of all these characters in different places. Like, the punks, I feel like I could see better in the Toxic Avenger, like the baddies in that. Or I feel like the police officers, I could see better depictions of corrupt, lazy police officers in, like, Sergeant Kabuki Man or something like that. Like, it feels like there's better places that, to see. And, like, I mean, think about the opening 15 minutes of Street Trash or something like that in terms of, like, vibrant, aggressive guerrilla filmmaking in a way that this film just never attains the heights of. It just feels like an indulgence throughout the majority.
No, it just felt a really weird representation of suburbia. I mean, it's suburbia and then the under-seedy side of it. I didn't ever feel like it was mediocre. I just felt like it was a very British view of Americanism. But I didn't ever feel like it was torn down. It sounds like you just want this to be something else. You want this to be a trauma film by the sound of it.
No, I do want it to be something else, in as much as what it is boring to me. So yeah, I mean, if that means that I'd like it to be different, then I think that's a fair criticism on my part, because as I say, what it is didn't satisfy me.
Mm-hmm. I don't really know what my else. I feel like we should wrap up this podcast. Like, okay.
Yeah, we've all come to a kind of like blunt, like awkward conclusion.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I actually enjoyed about it. Like I say, I thought the tone would appeal to me because it has like a kind of Saturday morning cartoon feel in a way that like a lot of films from that period embraced. And I love that. Like, that's something that I feel very warmly to. But for some reason, this film just, yeah, it left me cold on that front.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the performances. I like Emilio Estevez in it. For what he does, I like Harry Dean Stanton in it. But the trouble is, again, that the filmmaker just doesn't know what he's doing. Like, I can only compare him to, like, much better filmmakers, who he probably doesn't deserve to be compared to. But, like, if you think about Paul Thomas Anderson or something like that in There Will Be Blood, where you've got, like, one story that feels consistent all the way through, even though there's a multitude of diversions and multitude of different places that the story goes, whether that's the relationship with the rival priest or it's the brother that turns up to the house and is this guy really my brother or is he an imposter? You've got all these diverting things that take you off course from what the main thrust of the story is, which is an examination of like the degradation of this one character's soul. And yet, by the time you get to the end of the film, you feel like all the pieces were there intentionally for the purpose of serving this overall vision. Whereas in this film, it just feels like events disconnected with very little commitment creatively to what they should be. So, like, the punks feel like fluff. They feel like absolutely nothing, and they could... They're, like, the most disposable characters. I mean, same with the rival repo men. The closest thing you've got to a character that maybe stands out as being unique would be Harry Dean Stanton's character, but the rest of the repo men just feel like working class stereotypes. And I was confused about the girl that's being chased, that Emilio Estevez has a relationship with in a few scenes. Did she eventually end up on the side of the law enforcement agents, the woman with the steel hand?
Yeah,
or was that a different girl?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the same girl.
For me, this movie was a series of disjointed scenes that I could have turned on the TV any one moment and been just as into it as I would have been a half hour earlier. I wouldn't have been robbed of anything for missing the half hour, but would have wanted to see the first half hour in case I had something just as amusing in it. I don't expect this to return anything to me emotionally. It just made me smile. It was really juvenile in that respect. I felt that Over the Garden Wall was deeper than this movie, but that's not a slight on Repo Man. It's almost like an achievement that it managed to make something so incoherent but watchable. And it might even be an accident in the part of the filmmaker. It might just be someone like they just threw it in the editor, and the editor's like, oh my god, what the hell did you shoot? And try to piece something together out of it.
Well, I mean, if you want to confirm your opinion of the abilities of the director, you could look at Repo Chick,
I've heard. Oh my god.
Yeah. Because I just did a cursory look on IMDb to see, you know, what else he'd done, because I knew he'd done Sid and Nancy, and outside of that, I was fairly ignorant of, you know, what he was, you know, sort of acclaimed for and panned for and that kind of thing. And yeah, it, you know, Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Okay.
The cover looked somewhat like that. But yeah, I've yet to delve into the joys of Repo Chick, but I think he's taken the notion of superficiality and disposability to, you know, a really, like, you know, high degree by just making an utterly shite film only on green screen, that I can't find anyone who's said anything positive about it, really. So you're not alone in thinking that, you know, maybe he just, you know, he got a bit lucky and was there, right place, right time, and got a couple of good movies, and then things went really, really, really far south.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's one of those things that gets undersold in terms of what filmmaking's good at, and it's something that, in terms of storytelling, like, in terms of trusting someone to be a storyteller and say, you know, like, that I'm going to guide you on a path through this version of events, and it's going to be engaging because of my skill in imparting this information to you. This to me feels like a series of jokes without punchlines, where it's like, right, so two Hispanic guys turn up to rob a car, and oh, but wait, no, there's punks also in this. They're running about robbing places, and then there's an alien that drives through the streets and someone's kidnapped him, and but the girl's being chased by the, and it just feels like you're listening to someone who is not in control of the story that they're trying to tell you. And for me, that's something that just disconnects me from material when I'm showing it, unless it's so intentional that the tone draws me through it. And I can tell that it did with you guys. Like, it did.
It's like, okay, here's a suitable analogy for you. Punk music is good despite the fact they're terrible musicians. Okay? This is a punk movie, and it's good despite the fact he's not a good director. And I think, I don't know if he knows that or not. I don't know if that's a conscious thing for him. But Suicidal Tendencies, the Sex Pistols and so forth, they were never good musicians. But you could listen to them and you understood exactly what was happening, whether or not they were trying for it or not. And when punk music is too polished into that SoCal sound, it just doesn't appeal to me. It's like, you just, I don't know. It's, at that point, it feels like a formula. But this just feels like almost malformed. It's kind of spewed out. And it's just there. It's like an anomaly, and it exists in its own impetus. And I can get behind that.
I think you're overselling it, though, in terms of it being a punk film. Again, I feel like I can get what it's doing better elsewhere. Like, in terms of being a punk film made by people who don't know what they're doing. I mean, there's any number of... Ken Russell's probably a more punk filmmaker than Alex Cox, where his films are just so maverick by the end that they disregard narrative intentionally. But if you're going to be a filmmaker who disregards narrative, you have to have a strong enough voice where I trust you to disregard it, and I have to trust your intentions, that I need to trust that you're going to at least deliver something. And this guy just isn't good enough. His incompetence, he has a base level of competence, but his instincts are poor, I think, like, in terms of what he hopes to replace narrative with. I don't think the Repo Men are interesting. I don't think the punks are interesting. I don't think the alien stuff's interesting. I think it's all shallow shadows of more interesting things that you can see elsewhere.
I still enjoyed it. I don't really know
what
to say.
Yeah, I still liked it. You know, it's like, you know, not my face. My face!
That was funny.
You know, I think that's just a beautifully timed line. I love the bit in the club when you've got this, like, weird lounge act, and Otto just, like, sort of is disgusted. Like, oh, I used to like these guys. I'm not mistaking this film as, you know, this is what gets me through life. It's not. I mean, you're putting huge pressure on any film you're coming into contact with. That's your standard that you're looking for.
I just expect a base level of competence, or if you're incompetent, I want you to be completely incompetent. and be, you know, a complete disaster.
If he didn't have a good cinematographer, then you would have liked it. But
I'm trying to think of examples, and to be honest, it's
but because
difficult.
He had like Robbie Mueller, then it's a shit film.
I like the cinematography in it. Actually, I think that's one thing I can latch onto.
But that's not what you're saying. You're saying that it needed to be more incompetent.
No, I think the fault's with him as a storyteller. I think if he was more crazy as a filmmaker.
We just said there's no story to it. I mean, it's just a series of interesting scenarios stitched together. It's not
I disagree
a
with
story
the word interesting.
We're just at an impasse as far as, you know, what film is allowed to do, because, you know, you're like demanding like a narrative drive as utterly essential, and if it's not there, you know.
The only thing, I mean, the best example I can compare it to is Ken Russell. Like, I would watch Lair of the White Worm in a heartbeat over this, or I would watch, he made a film called Follow the Louse of Usher in his house on handycams, and it's mental, but it's more punk than this film. This film is just a weird netherworld anomaly that neither narratively engages me, nor is so intentionally narratively disengaging to interest me in any other way. Like, it doesn't provoke anything in me. It just sits there, like, stagnantly on the screen. And it is just a series of events. You describe them as interesting events. I would completely disagree.
Jack described them as interesting events.
Yeah, Jack described them as interesting events. I think they are
just for clarity's sake.
They are just events, and
there's scenes I would short. There were scenes I would just watch on their own. It's one of these things that was made before YouTube, but it's almost ideally suited to it. Each scene could be a YouTube clip on its own and would just amuse me no end. There's things I'm thinking through in my head just now. I'd love to rewatch them just for the sake of that scene alone, or even just certain shots. I feel like I can defend this in pieces, but not as a whole, but that's the point. The scene, one of my favourite shot pieces in it, in terms of the cinematography and, you know, the quote-unquote direction, which I really is critical on, is one of the final ones where they're driving up the rampway out of the hospital and they're being chased by a car. And that's one of the tensest car things I've seen in ages. It's really well shot. And then there's just stuff which is banal, but, like, mind-blowingly hilarious to me. And the line that you mentioned in the club, I can't believe you still like this band. And then it cuts to a shooby-dooby-dawah. And it's just like, it's the dumbest sitcom line, but there it works so well of a really bad lounge act. And there's dozens more I can think of besides that. So I saw a film last night that made me laugh to the point where I almost woke up my wife, and I could rewatch it now in a completely different order. And to me, that's commitment that I enjoyed it. I'm not going to give it a fucking award, but film can do more than just be a narrative.
Yeah, I was dying for a film to be fun. I needed a fun watch.
Oh, you're gonna love Trash Humpers. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. And another example.
It's an odd conversation that we're having now, because, like, you know, Jack starts talking about things he likes, and I'm sitting there like nodding, and then you start talking about all the shit that you hate, and I'm like, fuck, man, this is really grim. Because I can see where you're coming from. You know, I mean, there's not a list of, you know, the skills that you want that I can, like, present as a counterclaim for it. You know, I think it'd be giving it too much credit to say it's like a kind of, you know, a critique on superficiality. It's like wholeheartedly superficial. It's just a sign of the times. It's just like it's really just being part of, you know, yay, it's America, it's MTV, it's all that kind of, that era of, you know.
I think, Nick, you would have enjoyed this movie more in the same way that you would have enjoyed Class of 1999 more if you'd seen it in good company with a few beers.
Possibly.
I'm going to go with that.
I wouldn't disagree with that, but I would say I think I'm being misrepresented here in saying that I demand narrative from all my films or narrative engagement.
You demand narrative from this.
Well, no, I demand narrative from this because it isn't offering anything in its place that engages me. So So, like, if you imagine, like, a gradient where at one end is, like, excellent narrative and the other end could be tone, it could be a performance, could be a character, could be a theme, and the closer you get away from narrative, I want you to be moving further and further and further towards, you know, the thing that's on the end. And the closer you are to the middle is the danger zone where, you know, I'm completely losing interest. You don't have enough narrative to sustain me, and you don't have enough of the other thing to sustain me. Mm-hmm. And this film kind of teeters around the middle in a way that just, I find, I mean, Trash Humpers is a film that I love. We'll be talking about it soon. It has next to no narrative. You know, it's entirely experimental. There's any number of films that I completely adore that have next to no narrative, but because of what they do, they go so far in the other direction that I find them, you know, completely, you know, I love them. This film, I don't think, gets pushed enough into the other direction for what it's trying to do, and it just kind of constantly reminds you of the horrible narrative that it's got going, and does little to, you know, explode on the screen in terms of, you know, here I am doing this big exciting thing that you're not going to see anywhere else. That it just, to me, sorry Martin, I touched Martin.
That was awkward.
Where it just kind of leaves me cold.
Yeah. I don't know, I don't think a film like this has been around for, what is this, it's over, yeah, over just over 30 years now, where it have an appeal which is broader than you're giving it credit for. I mean, this is something that still comes up and it still gets new viewers. For fuck's sakes, it's got a Criterion Collection release. You know, it's this movie has got more than you're giving it credit for. It's not to your tone, it's not to your legs, but people love this movie. I mean, it's to the point where it was so popular and so culty and so talked up that, like I say, I thought I'd seen it and I'd avoid rewatching it. Like, I don't remember much about it, but rewatching it now is like, I clearly didn't see this, you know? I clearly did not see this. If I did see it, I must have been high, because I would remember something about it. I think it deserves the following it's got. I don't think, I mean, you keep on saying you've seen things better elsewhere, but if you've seen things better elsewhere, then why don't they have the cult following this movie does? It's got a lot more to it. It's got a lot of charm. The cinematography's handsome. The performances, although you don't enjoy them, are really amusing in these little bubbles that they exist in. And it's just fun. I don't know what more to say. I feel like we should start getting drunk and shouting at one another at this point. I'm gonna... Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's a complete impasse. I mean, this is only slightly less awkward than you talking about Chaplin.
No, I think I'd put this as a edging forward into, you know, being the most awkward like conversation that we've had. just that it's brought out like this like steely vehemence, yeah, in Nick.
Just I know, like, and I'm usually the one who's...
I will not be countered, yeah, on this.
I'm usually super positive about the films that we review, like, in terms
you
of...
You are. Credit you, yeah.
This one, yeah, it just isn't for me.
Who would have thought this would be a controversial film, though, for us?
I know, it's a strange one.
Have you seen any other Alex Cox?
No.
I've seen Sid and Nancy, and I remember that as being a sort of mediocre drama. And I've seen, what's it called? I can't remember. I've seen one other he did. And there are some styles where they're just sort of like meandering and weird. But apparently his filmmaking style switched about the late 80s into the 90s, where he made a habit of doing really long, like 5-minute shots and like minimal setups. And the tone was still odd, but he had a complete shift in filmmaking style, and he moved away from Hollywood into like Nigeria, not Southern Nigeria, Nicaragua and Mexico and things like that, and he just got further and further away from Hollywood and more and more disillusioned, and he made Repo Chick because they were threatening to remake or make a sequel to Repo Man with not involving him. And he managed to do something very complicated involving legal rights, where he made Repo Chick in a very legally ambiguous way that stopped them from doing anything. So he was almost just being a dick to the Hollywood system, where, like, if you're going to fuck up my movie, I'm going to fuck it up first.
That's an interesting take on it, because, I mean, honestly, when I saw just, like, the poster for this movie...
It's horrendous.
Just like, it's repellent. I mean, it's a powerful thing to see this and be like, what the fuck? What happened there?
And you said it's all shot on green screen, Jack.
Martin said that, but that's true.
Oh, you said that, sorry.
He got a red camera, he set up a green screen, and he filmed it in 10 days. And by all accounts, it is atrocious. It's really horrendous. But I mean, that said, that's what impression I got. That he made a bad film on purpose to just kind of fuck with the studios. Like, you're not going to touch Repo Man unless I can do it. But he made another film off Kickstarter soon after that. And it's called something stupid like Billy the Spaceman or something fucking retarded like that. And it's rated even lower than Repo Chick. So, and you have to ask yourself, like, what the fuck? I mean, this is a guy, before I knew he was a filmmaker, I just knew him as that guy off Movie Drome on BBC Two.
I've not seen any of his other films. He was the intro guy for Cool Films.
Yeah, that's the first time I saw Videodrome was on Moviedrome, being introduced by him. The first time I saw The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was introduced by him. The first time I saw Driller Killer was introduced by him, and he had always interest in educational things to say about it. So I didn't even know he was the same guy until I think I was in uni, and it kind of clicked that it was the same person. I was watching like one of the VHS they had in the university basement of like something taped off Moviedrome in like the fucking 80s or something like that. And I saw his name and it just, a light went in my head, like, oh my God, that's Alex Cox of Sid and Nancy, which I'd seen like a month before. So he's got this kind of university professor stance, but I mean, as a filmmaker, I grant you, an odd career. I mean, it seems like I'm not going to talk against Repo Man. I enjoyed it too much. But it seems like he's willfully sort of self-destructing his own career for years after this. And you're talking about satirization of satirization. I think it might be, you know, layers and layers of self-satirization and self, like, just sabotaging his own career. He's a very strange guy. But I'm not going to recommend him as a mature, but I don't know. If I come across some 15-year-old who's looking for a fun movie, I'm totally going to recommend Repo Man. Definitely.
Let me speak to them first.
Oh, yeah, you're going to recommend Trash Humpers. That would be in a storm.
I think we should watch every Alex Cox movie. I want the whole canon.
Ah, that would be painful.
I guarantee you they'd have more fun with Toxic Avenger, say. Guarantee it.
Well, I mean,
I always thought those films were just a bit of shit.
They are, you know, but they at least are what they are on a more committed level, I think, than this film is.
Okay. Well, I don't want to talk about things we haven't seen yet, but I'm scared to watch Trash Humpers. This had better come through, Nick, because
You might hate it. Like, I can't guarantee that you won't hate it, but I
feel like obliged to hate it so that I can like get one back at you.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's super, super funny and super weird. It had lost its luster slightly on a rewatch, but actually, yeah, I would recommend it. I would always recommend it. I think it's really solid.
So we're doing that as a kind of double header with the Spring Breakers.
Yeah, do you know, actually, I hadn't watched any other. I was feeling bad, like, because I haven't seen any Harmony Korine except Spring Breakers and Trash Humpers. So I went and watched Kids. Have you seen Kids?
He wrote that. He didn't direct it, though.
Yeah, he wrote it. I think it was a Larry Clark film.
Oh, like, good. Oh, right, yeah. I thought it was another film.
No.
Because you were talking about
Kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah. Do you like it?
I wouldn't say like.
You're not allowed to say you like Kids.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's odd. It's a.
There's a documentary coming out from one of the kids who was on the set of that, making a documentary about what it was like to be a kid on the set of that movie. And I'm curious, but almost like reluctant to know the truth. Like, I don't think I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I've never like wholeheartedly to subscribe to the really damaging effects of the male gaze in like classical cinema as being an objectifier and, you know, a wielder of power, and, you know, but in Kids, yeah, it's an odd feeling when you feel like someone's like watching the actors and, you know, manipulating them to do things for like personal gratification. It's an uneasy film. It might be somewhat, I mean, it, it didn't feel a dishonest film, you know? I mean, kids go around and, you know, have sex with each other at that age, and but yeah, it just felt like a whole heap of creepy.
Yeah, I would agree, but I don't think it's bad creepy. Like, I would have sooner, like, we were. This is almost a perfect example where I would wish there was less narrative in Kids, where it was all just like a day in the life of, where you're just hanging out with these really obnoxious arsehole kids doing
rather than giving
things.
It the kind of, you know, the AIDS STD stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
see, the HIV drive, stuff, yeah. that really needs to go for me, like, and just have it be kind of wandery and, you know, unfocused, but just more honestly like a depiction of a day in the life. Where I think the film maybe loses my attention is when it tries to hamstring that story into it, when I'm more happy just to kind of zone out and just, you know, indulge in the atmosphere and the lives of these really horrible, horrible children.
Mm-hmm.
So, that kind of brings it round in a sense, like, in terms of saying, like, if you're going to... Because I think that film truly commits to what it's doing. Like, for all you can say about it, it doesn't go in for half measures, mm-hmm. At least in the first half.
No, it's like a kind of feel-bad companion piece for Gimme the Loot.
Yeah, totally. I was thinking
They both have, like, great depiction of the city, and it feels believable, but, you know, one feels full of, like, you know, energy and honesty, and the other one's full of, like, honesty and prurience.
Yeah.
And it's a brave thing to make an honestly prurient film about teenagers, but I can't really find myself applauding it, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm glad you did choose Spring... Okay, up and coming on Film Interrupted. I'm glad you chose filming Trash Humpers and Spring Breakers as a double bill, because in terms of what Harmony Curran does, that is... Like, that is the range. You know, that is, like, his most mainstream film, you know, with a very big actor, a big soundtrack, and a huge release that got a lot of attention in the year list with a film about old-age pensioners fucking piles of trash. You know, I mean...
And screaming, hump that trash pussy. It is honestly the funniest. It's genuinely really, really funny.
I'll
watch them. I'll watch them with an open mind, and I'll see what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. Should we do an up and coming section? I don't know if that's something we should actually do. And I mean,
it's difficult because I don't know what episode goes out in what order. But
yeah. I mean, we've got a long term plan of doing like a Kevin Costner thing. I don't want to talk about the film because it'll ruin it. But I'm looking forward to that. The Harmony Cream thing, I think, is well pitched, and anything else we plan is just sort of like off the cuff. And I'm determined not to like volunteer a topic or a show for an episode for the next while. I'm sorry I vetoed Henry's The Portrait of a Serial Killer, but that's, I mean, you talk about Kids and how like that lives in your memory is like being objectified and strange, but that's one of the few films I have that I don't know if I can rewatch. I don't know if it's as extreme as I remember, but I just don't know if I can do it.
The reason I'd ask to do an episode about it is because I haven't seen it. So it's not as if I would be recommending it as a rewatch. It's like, it's just one of those films that people always talk about that I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a test your metal movie for how extreme can it get. There's a scene in it.
It's definitely like the kind of the previous. The name of the movie's just gone out of my head. It's the previous generations. Did Irreversible.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the 80s Irreversible.
Right.
Not in the same, you know, realm, completely different, you know, structurally and visually, but yeah, it's it's something that you're watching it and you're like, why am I watching this? And why are other people watching it?
Yeah.
I don't think they should be watching it. It's probably okay for me to watch it because I'm thinking about it, but I don't think other people should be allowed to see this.
Yeah, there's a scene of the murder of a child in it that I think about that and I feel quite nauseous and like I don't know if I can take it again. I'm really past the age where I'm watching films to say, I know I can take this. You know, let's see the most extreme thing cinema can throw at me. Like, I'm well past that. You know, I'm not quite in my Driving Miss Daisy stage, but like, no, I'm just
come
not
on. We're we're doing, you know, a Kevin Costner special. We're pretty close.
Yeah, we're pretty close. Yeah, we're going to have to do something a bit edgy after that, admittedly. But
that is a funny instinct, though. Like, I remember that instinct in myself where I wanted to share extreme things to, you know, the people around me, which I've totally lost now. I have no interest in that. But having gone to, like, a couple of, like, horror film discussion groups, I see that instinct still, where people say, like, you need to sit down and watch this film with me. Like, you can come round to my house, but I'm going to make you watch this. And the concept just completely is so foreign to me now that I'm not 17. Mm-hmm. It seems so adolescent. I actually do remember when I was around 17, 18, showing Irreversible to my friends. The girl whose house I showed it to, is the girl's the nicest girl in the world, and she would have never seen anything like this. But I think what happened was I just seen it, and I was still trying to make sense of it because I felt horrid after it. I felt like
You're meant to feel, yeah.
Yeah, you know that way, like, but it's like your whole perspective on the world's changed and you're in a dark place afterwards. And I feel like I needed to have someone else to process it with me in order to kind of make sense of it. I know, but the thing was, I showed it in a room of maybe 9 people, and at the scene, the underpass scene, her little sister came in, and who was maybe like 10 or something.
I don't think we're allowed to even talk about this.
I know. No. I think this might get me in trouble. I think this could be the end of Film Interrupted unless you want to Skype me from.
Yeah, I'm sure they have wonderful technology. You can get smartphones that, you know, easily can be stored in body cavities, yeah. And then. You know.
But yeah, I think that was enough to scar me for life. To where I was thinking, like, why am I showing this to people? Like, why was that instinct something that I had? I think I can process it in terms of just wanting to make sense of the film myself. But like, I'm never going to demand that someone watch something just to test their mettle.
No, so, yeah. I mean, it's I don't really want to be responsible for, you know, for doing a film at someone, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Irreversible is not something I've ever, like, I watched it once, and I watched it by myself because I didn't want to have anyone around
exactly
who would think that, you know, it's like, is he watching this for enjoyment or of curiosity of, like, why did you bring this into my life?
I think at 17 though, you're all still kind of giddy about this sort of thing, about, you know, the
I'm older than you, so I mean, it wasn't really.
No,
the same
sure.
kind of thing. I mean, if it was something that came out while I was at school, then it's a completely different, you know, time frame. But, you know, it's not something that you'd go around and, like, you know, suggest to a girl you're going out with or, like, a work colleague.
Yeah.
I realised I didn't have that instinct anymore when the PR was hyping up for a Serbian film.
Ah.
Yeah, you just see that noise you made, right? I mean, I just couldn't do it. I read a synopsis and I got halfway through and went, no. And just, you know, the kind of tone of it was like, yeah, you know, it's the most extreme thing you've ever seen. Like, I'm just not watching it. I've no desire to see that anymore. And from there, I've just got more and more prudish as time has gone on too about what I can watch. But I don't want to be, I don't know, the old person bemoaning, like, you know, the downfall, but I totally had that instinct for such a long time. But I think it's something to do with youth and, like, maybe a sort of machoism. You know what I mean?
I think you just get to a point when you've seen enough films and realise enough about the structure and how they're made and what they're intended to do that you can see things like a Serbian film for what they are and what they're looking to gain traction for just being, you know, here as a depiction of just relentless brutality.
Mm.
And, you know, the world's got enough relentless brutality that you can witness, you know, anywhere, you know? I don't need to see kind of shoddily invented brutality. I'm not really squeamish in terms of, like, body horror stuff. Things like Saw and all the other imitations of it, Hostel and stuff like that, they're just a bit shit. It doesn't connect with me. It doesn't like inspire any kind of like fear or revulsion. It's not for me, you know. I wouldn't like have an interest in, you know, pursuing the next film where you see someone's like, you know, thigh bone shatter and, you know, gets, you know, their eyes gouged out and shit like that, when there's nothing else that's particularly interesting about the film other than it's people doing violence at you that you've paid for.
See, I do like a lot of films like that. Like, I do like Hostel, but what I think about when I think about those films aren't like the gratuitous, gory, you know, violent scenes. I tend to think more of like the holiday aspect of the film, where you're, you know, on a trip with these characters, and I think about the escape sequences and stuff like that, and the just kind of living vicariously through the characters in the film stuff. But I can't trust that a Serbian film is going to be like that. Like, I haven't seen a Serbian film, and because of its content, it's not something I think I would ever put at the top of a list of something that I'm desperate to see. And to be honest, I'd be surprised if I do end up seeing it. I wouldn't say, you know, it's completely off limits for me. It's just one of those things that, just because of the content, it would be upsetting, and it would be something that I think would be an endurance. And for that reason, it's never going to be the next thing that I'm desperate to watch. And I'm sure it'll be not the next thing that I'm desperate to watch all the way up till I die. So effectively, I am ruling it out in terms of watching it. But you compare it to something like Kill List, where that, for me, was a film that I was, you know, wholeheartedly ready to jump into, because I trust the storytelling enough to know that it's going to explore themes, it's going to have characters that are captivating, and it's going to go to dark places that doesn't just rely on, where the violence that it depicts is only the cherry on the top of the cake of the tonal horror that it's presenting to you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'd need some more reassurance that that's what a Serbian film was doing, and not just depicting it.
Yeah, there's no one that's really said anything about it apart from the fact that it's shocking, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, once again, wildly, wildly off topic.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's the most aggressive argument I've ever had, and it's not, that's the most negative I've ever heard you be about a film of disgust.
Yeah, I know, it's a new leaf. Bloody PlayStation 3, I blame for this. I now hate films, apparently.
Yeah, you were far better discussing video games when you never played them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, once again, wildly off topic. Let's wrap it up there. My name's Jack. Until next time.
It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Film Interrupted. If you want to contact us, we can be reached at Film Interrupted on Gmail, Tumblr, Facebook, and of course iTunes. If you'd like to contact us on Letterboxd, I can be found under TechnoSnob303, Martin under Martino Heat, and Nick under Nick Edie. Nice handle, Nick.